basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And D, we've only got a couple of pods left until free agency really gets going. We had a shocking trade, at least I thought, with LaMelo Ball going to the Wolves. Naz Reid headed to Charlotte. We've got some reports on LeBron and the Lakers not offering him a contract yet. But today we start with the news of the day, which is Jalen Duren and his representation being upset with the initial offer from Detroit and seeking sign and trades, ideally, followed quickly by Chris Haynes reporting that Detroit's front office going, no, he's not going anywhere, which is usually what's said about restricted free agents. But to be fair, it's usually what happens with restricted free agents. But in a Lakers marketplace where every day, hours of my day are spent thinking, who the hell are the Lakers going to get at the center spot, D? This is a guy that's an all-star this year. He's only 22 years old, very talented kid, and at least wanted to explore it for a segment at the very least, D. And so what are your thoughts on Jalen Duren, his possible availability, and just the news of the day in general?
You know that meme, Pete, where an old guy and a young guy standing outside of a car, and then the old guy is like, call an ambulance, and he acts like he's falling down. And then he's just like, but not for me, and he pulls out the gun. That's what I thought of when I thought of the Lakers swooping in to try to steal Jalen Duren after was the Pistons who were trying to swoop in and steal Austin Reeves. The turnabout is fair play idea there with those two. And this comes on the heels, actually, of like a report earlier in the offseason where there was the Pistons are warning Luka Doncic, keep your hands off of Jalen Duren. Basically, he's staying. The idea of Duren is interesting to me, Pete, but I'd love to dig into more about the realities of Duren a little bit more. I think he certainly fits the mold of everything that you would think the Lakers want from their center prospect to pair with Luka. The idea of him being a lob catching threat, someone who is like very good on both backboards and just like a big physical presence that can't be pushed around really on either side of the floor. And I think that pursuing him is something that the Lakers are probably pursuing almost every quote unquote gettable center or center who has any possibility of leaving their current team. They should be in on all of those guys in reality. But I'd love to kick the idea back to you about Duren specifically, because don't get me wrong, he was third team all NBA this season. He's super young still. I think he's only 22 and he's feels like he's been in the league for a while now, fourth year or whatever. But he's actually not exactly what I'm looking for. Same. In some interesting ways.
I think it's essential that we get a center that's really good on the defensive end. And I don't think he's that good of a rim protector. And I don't think he's that good of a pick and roll defender. He's a very good overall player. And in that whole, who the hell are we going to get at the five spot? I don't want to look a potential gift horse in the mouth. You know, he's 22 years old and can continue to get better. Although if you're not blocking shots at 22, you're not really blocking shots at 26 or 27. That's not something that you get better at with age. He's at his most athletic as he is now. And it's really not a matter of athleticism, although he's not as good of a jumper if he doesn't have a running start. Like, he is more below the rim in a lot of circumstances than you would think. And I just don't think he reads the game particularly well on the defensive end. And as a result of that, like, his playoff drop off this year, I don't think it's a fluke. And so at his price, all of this has to be measured against how much is that player going to cost. If the Lakers were to have any chance at Jalen Duren, it would have to be at a number that Detroit's like, hell no, we're not bringing him back at, which we don't even know if that exists, right? There was a report that the Lakers initially offered Austin $30 million. And got flipped into the 46 that he ended up getting because he found an offer that was able to match that. So I think a lot of that's what's going on. We saw this happen with Kessler. We've seen this happen with restricted free agency. Restricted free agency sucks, man. And we see this play out over and over again where the teams have so much leverage that they come in with an offer that's like, well, what are you going to do about it? You're going to get an offer sheet? Who's the last guy to get an offer sheet? Ayton? It's been years because teams don't even bother with that. And I, again, if they're going to go after a Durin or a Kessler or someone like that, I don't think it's going to be the offer sheet route. I think you have to agree to a sign and trade simply because of the timing of it. Like, you don't even get a resolution on whether or not the other team matches until what, July 9th? Most of the movement is over by then. You can still do stuff. You can still make trades and all of that. And again, I do think that the Lakers are more focused on the trade market and all of that, D. But for somebody that, again, doesn't really check a lot of the defensive boxes that I think are essential and at the money that he's going to cost, like, I'm lower on him than a lot of people are, while acknowledging that he's a really good player overall and he's going to continue to get better.
Durin may very well end up being worth the 35, 40, whatever million dollars he gets from whatever team he's going to play for next season and beyond. Most of that will be wrapped into his ability to maintain his offensive ceiling through like the longer parts of the NBA season, like including a deep playoff run and his rebounding. Now, to be fair, his rebounding was still pretty good during the playoffs, but his scoring essentially got cut in half. And the Lakers don't need a big guy whose utility and salary structure is built into the idea that they're going to be a 20 and 10 player. Like, so for example, if you were to tell me the Lakers could pay Jalen Durin $40 million a year, and I wouldn't want to pay this much for Durin necessarily, or for Walker Kessler, but let's just say both of them end up making $40 million next year, I would be more willing to pay Walker Kessler $40 million to basically be like, what I really need from you is this. I need elite level defense, at least like from the free throw line and in, and one of the league's best rim protectors. And I need enough offensive utility where it's just like, you're going to finish everything inside with two elite shot creators, and then maybe start to expand your game from there. But basically, I'm paying for elite defense and rebounding first and foremost. And I think the formula with Durin is you're trying to get elite offense with the rebounding. And look, he's worth that within the context of whatever team build that you have. If he's your second or third best player, and what you need from that player is offensive function with rebounding being like the next best trait, I get it. There's a bunch of players who make a lot of money doing exactly that. I just don't think that's what the Lakers need.
I agree it's not what the Lakers need, but is it what Luka and the Lakers might want, right? When Luka says, I want an A-list center, what that could mean, I mean, I'd imagine some of that comes with I want a second end of our pick and roll to be unstoppable. Like, if it's me coming off of this screen or Austin coming off of this screen and this dude rolling to the basket, good luck. Everybody's going to be open. And so while I agree with you and I have that same position of defense is way more important at this spot than the lob threat and the offensive utility, I'm not entirely sure that the Lakers see it that way as well. So let's go to break, come back and keep it going.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, and this is where I don't want to speculate too much, but I would hope the Lakers see it our way. Because in the big picture, I understand that you need a certain amount of offensive utility from this position. Jared Allen, to me, would be like a very good example of a player like, look, he's not going to score the ball from outside of 15 feet, really ever. But 15 feet and in, I trust him to do a lot in terms of being able to finish and be that sort of second end connector as a pick and roll player. He's going to be able to catch lobs. He's going to be able to catch pocket passes. He can play in a phone booth a little bit and be like, I can shoot jump hooks with either hand. He's got a one dribble and then drop step. He's got all of the big man tools, like, you know, straight out of the Pete Newell big man camp. And to your point about making the back end of your pick and roll unstoppable, one of the things you also need to be able to do is beat switches, and can you post up against smaller players? And also, can you occupy enough defenders when they do collapse on you that the team is able to pay it off with shooting, like on the other end? And this is where the idea of like the pick and roll offense being unstoppable is, like, you really do need all of the ingredients. And I actually think that Durin suffered a fair amount in this way with the Pistons. And it's one of the reasons why his numbers did fall off. Outside of Cade, okay, well, it's Tobias Harris, who had a good playoffs until like the very end and there, and Asar Thompson. And then it was Duncan Robinson. And when Robinson didn't play, you totally saw the difference in Detroit's offense. Mm-hmm. Part of Durin's problem was they were just like, guess what we're not doing? We're not letting you roll to the basket at all. Mm-hmm. And we're going to clog the paint in a way where your production is going to suffer from this specific angle. And I think the Lakers are better equipped to deal with that sort of defense because of the offensive framework that Luka and Austin provide.
I totally agree with this. And part of what you were describing there too, when you've got Duncan Robinson and Tobias Harris as your next best players offensively, that leads to a degree of you need your big guy to dribble. And Durin can do it. But I think we saw in the playoffs a degree of being able to be disrupted at that the Lakers wouldn't need that nearly as much. You'd need him to be a role guy. And I'm curious, you know, what he would think of that. Do I want to just be a role guy? A lot of times once a guy gets the ball in his hands, he wants to do it more. But I don't think he'd have to cut that out of his diet, D, but I don't think it would be as necessary as it was on the Pistons.
One of the ways that Durin was able to score 20 points a game during the regular season, though, too, Pete, is that he added a bit of a mid-range game to his offense, right? And so he could catch the ball 15 to 18 feet out. He could turn and face, and he could take and make a jump shot. One of the differentiators, I would say, between being a Durin-level offensive player and like an Anthony Davis, when AD was his age, level player, is sort of the dexterity off of the dribble and being able to do more things from 18 feet and in than just shoot the jumper or try to bull your way all of the way to the basket to dunk the ball. And I remember when the Lakers first got AD, and we had watched AD plenty in national TV games and league pass and things like that. But as you always say, it's much different when you get to watch a player night after night after night. It was all of the funky angles and ways and shot attempts that AD was able to get off, particularly when he was 27, 28 years old and had all the bendiness to him still as an athlete. One of the positives about Durin is his strength. It is his frame. It is sort of the physicality that he brings. But with that sort of frame comes an inherent sort of stiffness, right? Mm-hmm. And that lack of bendability, that lack of like, oh, I can shift my shoulders just enough this way to get off a one-handed floater in traffic. That's just not Durin's game. Mm-hmm. And so that ceiling of being like an offensive hub sort of player where it's just like, no, we can just give you the ball and we can run offense through you, that requires more creativity offensively than I think Durin has in his game right now, and probably even projects to be 4 or 5 years from now throughout the entirety of his prime. And so this is why when I talk about paying a player that much money, I'd be more than happy to you're going to be that awesome on offense and be a great rebounder. Then I might even say, well, you actually do fit with the Lakers. I don't care. You're awesome.
Sure, because we know you're going to get that 20 and 10, and that 20 you can pretty much write in pen, and I don't think he's that level of offensive player as we saw in the playoffs.
Yeah, and so that's my sort of point with Durin. I think he's a really good player, and I think that he really fits with what Detroit wants to do, and I think Detroit would be wise to continue to sort of add shooting. Like, there was just a report this morning that they're going to use some of their cap space or maybe the trade exception that they got from the deal that saw Beef Stew go to Memphis. And they're trading for Isaiah Joe from OKC. And it's just like, the more and more Isaiah Joe level shooters that Detroit could put on the floor next to Cade Cunningham, then that's going to be great for them. And that's going to help Duren. I just think that for the Lakers' perspective, I understand their infrastructure might allow for Duren to still be able to roll to the basket cleaner, and Luka's going to get him the same sorts of looks that Cade could get him, and on and on and on. But this goes back to what the Lakers' needs really are, which is where we bring back in the defensive discussion and why I'd much rather pay a player whose best attributes and motor are more geared towards defense and rebounding and protecting the basket and even being able to play out on the floor a little bit more than even Kessler can, right? In terms of defensively. I know Kessler can do that some, but that's not the best part of his game. I want to pay a guy who's going to protect the house, and that's what he sees himself as. This is my main job out here.
But who is that guy? Like, we're at that point, D, where we got to stop talking about archetypes and start talking about that actual player. And it feels like every big that we want has a low probability of being available, whether it's Kessler or Hartenstein, even Duren. Like, I'd be stunned if the Lakers were able to get him. Like, I think that you would need to do a sign and trade with it. For example, there's a Duren for Jaylen Brown type of rumor that those would be the main principles. Like, yeah, I could see that if you were giving the Pistons back something that they would really, really like and have a replacement at that five spot as well. Like, yeah, maybe, but just for a couple of future picks, like, no, they're trying to win now. They were the number one seed in the East and lost in the second round. Like, they're trying to continue to grow. So if they replace Duren, it's going to be for a really good player that Lakers don't have to trade. And so going down that list, like, more and more, like, I don't know who it's going to be. I'd be happy if it were Allen or Hartenstein. And then after that, it's like, uninspired. This is the fourth transaction cycle since we've had Luka. If we come out of the fourth transaction cycle that we've had since having Luka with freaking Miles Turner as the best guy that we can get, or Mitchell Robinson and Jackson Hayes in a trench coat pretending to be add up to one whole starting center.
I hear it.
Who are we going to get at the five? Who is this guy that guards the house that you're talking about?
I don't know. I have been coming around more and more to the Turner idea, honestly.
Yeah.
All of this is dependent on price. We were talking about this with Duren, and I don't even know if we hammered that point home enough. One of the reasons why we were talking about price with Duren was, what are you exactly paying for? Like, I think he'll totally be worth a salary in the 30s. That's totally fine to me. If it starts to flirt with 40, that's Detroit's problem, I think, for a team that wants to match. But still, he can live up to that salary mostly through how good he is while still being as young as he is. For a player like Turner, his cost is already baked in. We know what his salary is. He has a player option 2 years from now. And it's just like, it's not the best contract, obviously. But if the Lakers were to get Turner and they could get him for a package that of like mostly trades rather than absorbing his money into their salary cap space, I would be open to that. And if you're able to trade Jared Vanderbilt and possibly Dalton and maybe even Jake, those guys get to Turner's salary next season essentially all on their own. It's very close to that.
And then you still have a good deal of money left over to address the Lakers' other needs as well, right? And so it's not just this five spot. And that's part of the reason why it's like, if we're going to pay a five $40 million, he better be everything we ever wanted in a lot of ways. And that guy's not out there.
No, he's not. Prime Anthony Davis is not walking through this door, right? And like, even Kessler to a certain degree, like,
no, that's a great
point.
We were
talking some yesterday. Yeah. It's just like, I wouldn't even want to pay him $40 million
likewise.
A season.
Likewise. Mm-hmm.
These are the perils of free agency in general. If you're not paying a guy an exception, you're likely overpaying him in free agency. And if you're trying to pry a restricted free agent away from their team, it's because you've made it so uncomfortable for them financially, which already inherently describes an overpay, Pete. And so let's take our second break here. And when we come back, I want to flesh out some of the Turner stuff. And also, I did want to circle back to Austin's contract really quickly.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the things I will say about Turner, Pete, is that He is not of the archetype of pick and dive and get to the basket and be the lob threat. He is way more of a floor spacer. His defensive utility has declined from where it was 3 or 4 years ago when he was in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. But defensively, I think that his instincts are still, this is what I came in the league doing, and I'm still going to take pride in this side of the ball. I think he can still protect the rim. As he's gotten older, he has filled out in terms of his strength. And so I do think like he's more able to sort of stand in there and be more of a post defender and a positional defender, as well as someone who has good timing and rim protection instincts and everything else. One of the things I will say about Turner in terms of like overall fit within the team is that I think a floor spacing big is like a great idea for the Lakers in general, and that being able to facilitate five out offense, particularly in the Western Conference, is like a huge idea, Pete, that I think has a bunch of untapped value within the context of how this Lakers team, specifically led by Luka and Austin, can be really good.
You're right. With the five out stuff, you're right with the, he's a defensive five, that he was the starting center on a team that came this close to winning an NBA championship just last season, right? And we have Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves as our main guys, and we're going to come out of it without a role man. You're right that he's got two-way value, and this might be me just accepting that Turner, he's always been sort of the floor of acceptability for, like, I'm going to be upset if, again, if it's like Mitchell Robinson, who's a good player, Time Lord, who's a good player, like, but we can't come out of this with a backup. I like Misi as a talent add, but we need a starting five that I can see, hey, we're in the Western Conference Finals, we're playing OKC or San Antonio, Minnesota, whatever, and we could go to war with this guy as the starting five. And he's been the baseline, like, it's got to at least be Turner. So I, again, I'll be okay with it, I suppose, but like, we don't come out of it with a role man for Luka and Austin.
He's a different archetype of player, and this is where I think you have to come to terms with the idea of he can roll some.
Sure.
It's not like he can't finish around the basket and that he can't be spoon-fed the sorts of passes that Luka throws Ayton and other like ground-bound players around the rim, and that he can't finish inside. It's just that his utility in terms of his overall value for offense is going to be the fact that he can space to the corner and that he can pick and pop and space above the break. And I think that there's real value in that. I think the bigger question around Turner in general is, will he pay off enough of those shots to like punish the defense? And this is where I actually thought what happened in Indy, how that mattered within the context of them losing the finals to OKC. Over the second half of those finals, I thought the quality of shots that Turner was getting, if he makes those shots, I think Indy wins the championship.
Yeah.
And he didn't make those shots and they lost. Now, in game seven, they still could have won. Halliburton gets hurt and that's the end of that, right? But the idea of him being like capable enough on both ends of the floor, I think that he's shown that he can live in that world as a part of a really good overall team, right? Mm-hmm. But that team had an all-NBA guard, which the Lakers do. And they also had another all-NBA forward, level forward in Siakam that the Lakers don't have. That player. You could say LeBron can be that sort of guy. And I think that maybe in the playoffs, he could be still, even at 42. Who knows, right? But it is a different idea of a team. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, go get Miles Turner and I'm going to be thrilled. I said at the top that I'm coming around more to the idea of Turner because I see where the value is with him, particularly within the context of what I would want the Lakers to trade. That's a ton of caveats I just put on that idea. And so I'm sitting here looking like that Sandra Bullock meme from that movie that I can't even remember the name of, where she's blindfolded and sort of feeling out in the dark. I too am looking for the center solution for the Lakers and not finding anything, honestly.
And frankly, we always have to keep in the back of our mind that we don't know what we don't know. And if you asked me 3 days ago if LaMelo Ball was going to be on the block to be traded, I would have thought you were crazy. And so, you know, we'll see. We'll see who ends up being available at that spot. You'd said you wanted to talk Austin. I'd want to talk a little bit about LeBron as well. So talk to me about the Austin front.
it really does seem like the Lakers got squeezed here. Mm-hmm. I sort of wanted to credit everyone who got this deal done and for the Lakers to sort of understand. And me coming back to the idea of you don't want to lose Austin for nothing, obviously. Mm-hmm. We all really like Austin, regardless of how much he's getting paid or whether you think it's an overpay or not. And I do think that it's a bit of an overpay. It just is what it is. That I think the Lakers understood that you can't lose him for nothing. And he's too good of a player to just be like, a few million dollars here. That said, that is going to matter. Mm-hmm. But I credit Austin's agents and the marketplace really to be like, no, people are willing to pay him a lot of money to come to a different team to play basketball. And the Lakers were sort of just like, whatever they were arguing, like, oh, 5 for $150 or $160, like, let's do that. Wouldn't you be happy? I would have been thrilled with that level of deal, but that would have required there to be market conditions that would have sort of pushed his value down. And that's not what happened. So that's all I wanted to say about Austin.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about negotiation tactics and things like that. But one thing I do know is that there's a principle called best alternative to negotiated agreement. And so it's like for each side of a negotiation, okay, if we don't come to terms here, what's the best thing that can happen here? And for Austin, it's like, well, I go to Detroit and get paid this money and compete for a championship in the East. And for the Lakers, it was, you know what I mean? Like you said, you just can't let them walk. And so that's why an offer goes from $30 million to $46 million into the max contract that it did. And I'm glad the Lakers tried to negotiate. I know some Laker fans are upset at like a lowball offer and all of that. This is what the game is. Everybody's got to fight for their own interest. And just like I don't begrudge Austin for being like, oh, I'm not going to take every dollar that I can get and then getting a max deal that he could. Do your thing. I've got no problems with either of that. But he definitely had the leverage in the market. And again, all I wanted is for, if it doesn't work out, there to be other teams to be willing to pay him that. And under current conditions, things can change as, you know, injuries and, you know, performance and all of that. But as of right now, it seemed like there were a few teams that were at least interested in kicking the tires on that, between Detroit and Brooklyn and Atlanta. I think he had a market, right? And so I think that's where things land. Who has possibly less of a market, though, is LeBron. We got some reporting from Shams saying that after initially reaching out at the beginning of this negotiating window, if you don't know, this is a window right now where teams can negotiate with their own free agents, and it's exclusive. They're not, I mean, at least on paper, right? Let's be real here. Like, people are talking to each other and setting things up. But the point of what Shams had reported was that the Lakers and LeBron and Clutch and all that haven't been in touch really that much. And there certainly isn't an offer on the table. I've been saying for a while that I think that the odds of LeBron coming back are a good deal lower than are reported. I was telling you yesterday, I think it's a combination of, I think people are taking three facts and making assumptions based off of that that are totally reasonable, but I think it sort of misses a Lakers perspective in that LeBron really likes LA and just for quality of life reasons would rather not leave. LeBron is still a really, really good player, and the Lakers need really, really good players. So it's very easy to be like, well, why wouldn't they come to an agreement? They both have interests here. I don't think, again, that entirely encapsulates where the Lakers are coming from, but what was your reaction to Shams' report?
So a bit of a yes and no. Not surprised that the Lakers haven't made an offer to LeBron James. I've long said on this pod that I think the Lakers need to prioritize the rest of free agency before they prioritize LeBron's salary. I think the best tactic that they can use is like, look at this great team that we've built. Would you like to come back to it and play basketball for us? But it's going to be at sort of this salary range or this salary price because that's what we have left over. The context of that sort of like, we're coming to you with this offer is that you've kept up the sort of positive touch-ins and check-ins and relations that go with that. And this Shams reporting is light on those sorts of details. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I am a little bit surprised, Pete, that they haven't been a little bit more, just so you know, we've got these irons in the fire sort of thing. We don't need to know the details of those conversations, Pete. And again, I think starting to talk numbers at this stage of the game, I do think that would be a mistake, because then you start to maybe corner yourself into a number that if you go out and find other capable business in the marketplace that would improve your team, that you would like to still add LeBron to, you don't want to cut off those avenues because you've made a promise with a number to LeBron in a range that won't allow you to make those moves still. Right.
Yeah.
But the checking in aspect of this, or the like, hey, how's it going? You're our guy. We love you sort of thing. Again, that feels a little absent from this report. That it is a bit of a surprise.
And this is a profoundly different dynamic than any other negotiation LeBron's ever been involved in that, like, not only had there always been those check-ins, it had always been an assumed max contract, but also a degree of, like, these are the players that we're going after. This is what we're thinking. And what do you think about adding these types of guys? That was really what stood out to me, 2D, is a lack of touching base. Because, look, LeBron is still a better player this upcoming year than the contract that he's going to get. At least I believe that that's what's going to happen. And so at the very least, considering the history and just the respect that he deserves, right, is you, if you were hoping to have him back on a personal level, there's a certain amount of, like, appreciate you, hat in hand, want to check in, like a little sort of deference. If not going to give me money, at least give me a little bit of respect and deference. That the lack of that is notable.
I will say that, again, we're not in the room. We're not privy to what's been said, what will be said later on today or tomorrow or whatever, right? So that messaging very well could have happened in the very early conversations that we're talking about. It very much could have been Rob sort of hat in hand, or however you want to frame it, right? Of just like, yo, man, we get it. 8 years, it's been great. Championship. We've always maintained we'd love to see you retire here. Where our mindset is right now is we do believe we need to go out into the marketplace and try to figure out the best way to build this team over the next 5 years. We know you understand that. And we'll circle back when we have more information that's actually shareable and actionable, that will then sort of like fill out the rest of our conversations. And if that was the tone that was struck, then that's what I'm hopeful happened, right? Because even if LeBron doesn't come back next season, I do want to make sure that every step along the way, even if it's that single step at the very beginning and then another step at the very end, that is just like, it didn't work out, that the feeling of his value to the organization over this stretch of time is understood by both parties and is conveyed at the level and to the degree that it needs to be conveyed. Because we'll say this until however long we have a platform to talk about this. I know you and I are in lockstep with this. Is this dude came to a team that was not very good at all. And within 2 years, they won the fucking championship. And that's it. Full stop. I don't care what happened after. I don't care about Russell Westbrook. I don't care about who said what, who did what, how they did it, how they said it, poutiness or not poutiness, or who
cares?
That's
a made man. That's a made man in Lakerland. Yep.
He's been awesome for the Lakers and for the organization. That's it. And this last thing that he did with the young superstars that are supposed to be the next phase of this team are suddenly more injured than seemingly LeBron's almost ever been for the organization ever. And he's the 41-year-old leading a team to a first-round upset in which they were literally picked against to start the series. And as you laid out, in every single game they won were underdogs. That's the classic definition of, no, we upset the other team. You could talk about no Kevin Durant or whatever, or yada, yada, yada.
I don't want to hear it. No, no.
No, the Lakers were not favored to win, and they won. And they mostly won because LeBron, standing in the middle of it as the son of the team, he didn't have to score the most points or have the most assists or have the most rebounds. He was the functional rudder of the ship, captaining the entire thing, where he understood exactly what needed to happen, and they won a playoff series when really they probably had no business winning it. This is the level of player that he's been for the organization. And so I just want to make sure that like we understand all of those pieces, but it is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where do things stand really? And these are the unanswered questions 3 or 4 days before free agency starts for sure.
All right. If any big news breaks this weekend, we will be able to record on Sunday and get the pod out then. But if not, we will talk on Monday where the deadline, that's the deadline, I think, for not only the Lakers, but several player and team options around the league. So Marcus, DeAndre Ayton, Isaiah Hartenstein, players like that. And so we'll probably talk about that. And then I'd love to talk to you about some of the wings. We haven't really talked about the wing position a ton. And there are a couple of newish type of options that I wasn't expecting that would love to talk to you about. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ames has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One. Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.